Back with The Record on KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. You're listening to KUOW Real News. Just trust me. Not the fake stuff.
And I want you all to know that we are fighting the fake news. It's fake, phony, fake.
So President Trump, they're referring to sources like CNN or USA Today, sources we in the news business wouldn't call fake. But that doesn't mean false news stories don't exist, and it can be hard to figure out what is real and what's not. So University of Washington professors Jevin West and Carl Bergstrom created a class called Calling BS. It is now an official course at the UW, and they join us in the studio to talk about it. Thanks to you both.
Thanks, Bill. It was fun talking with you last time. And
yep.
Now we've got a year of what we've learned from the students and what we've learned in teaching the class. So it's been fun. I think one of the big things we learned is that students know that this is a problem, and they're taking the class, and they come from all walks of life.
Yes. So they come from all walks of life to take a Calling BS class, the synopsis of which says, our world is saturated with BS. Learn to detect it and diffuse it. How do you diffuse BS, Carl?
Well, the idea is you want to try to explain to people why BS is wrong. You got to spot it, first of all, and then you've got to be able to refute it in various ways. And that may not be just yelling at the top of your lungs.
No?
I don't know. That's what I do on the internet. But what you should do, you know, is think about your audience and think about, how do I reach my audience? How do I explain to my audience what it is that I want to get through? What's wrong with this story that I see? And that can be really, really different depending on whether your audience is, your uncle or your academic colleagues. If you're a student, working in some area of the sciences or whatever the case may be.
What's an example of a skill you'll teach in this Calling BS class?
So, I mean, one of the simplest things is we just ask the students to question their source, like, who's telling me this? How do they know it? And what do they have to gain from it? And also little principles like, if it sounds too good to be true or too bad, it probably is. That one I use almost every single day.
Really? Aren't some things just wonderful or terrible enough to be true?
In times they are.
It's the minority.
That is. But put that flag out, anytime you hear that. But I mean, the other big things, our focus on the class is around the ways in which you can BS with data. So with graphics, with figures, with statistics. And that's really our expertise, because there's organizations around the country that are really fighting back at this. I think that's the sort of silver lining in all this, is that there's been a concerted effort from industry, from the journalism world, from the public, and from governments to really fight back. And our specialty is in teaching students, when they see a graph that's been zoomed out so far and they claim there's no trend in temperatures around the Earth, that they should maybe consider the ways in which that graph was created and zoom back in and see maybe that there's a 2-degree increase over the last 50 years.
But how do I spot? I mean, I see a graph. It's not like the graph has some kind of warning, this is sketchy.
Well, that's right. I think there are some kind of principles that we try to teach people to think about. One is just to think about the way that the axes are being used to create an impression. So if there's a very small difference between, say, a $1,000 return and a $1,005 return, and I say, oh, my fund is doing way better than your fund. Hmm. If I cut a graph, but I cut the axes off at 999 and just go up from there, it's like one bar is really small, the other bar is really huge. Makes it look like there's an enormous difference between two bars on a bar graph. Just teaching people to be aware of these kinds of tricks. And I think that's been one of the things that's so much fun with students. We do this all the way through with middle schoolers on up, and we teach them some of these things, and then we have them look at their own data, and we say, okay, now try to convince us of this story. Try to convince us that single payer healthcare is great or single payer healthcare is terrible, using these true data that we've pulled from say the World Bank. And
is there true data? There's not.
Oh, that is a good question. That's a good question.
Because you could argue that you just select your data.
Well, okay. So that's a very good question. I think there is more and less reliable data.
Okay.
And I tend to be relatively fond of these NGOs and sorts of things as data sources. But you're right to call me on that.
By the way, when we talk about misleading graphs, now we're talking about, in journalism, now we're talking about bad journalism. But I started off talking about fake news.
Right.
Do you cover both? What's the important difference?
Yeah, so we do. We have, like, again, our focus is on that, the sort of ways in which information and arguments are conveyed through numbers. But we have several weeks devoted to fake news and sort of the digital world that students and the public live in nowadays. And so we talk about the kinds of things that you can look out for in, you know, your social media platforms. I mean, just even just today, you know, Twitter came out and admitted that they're sort of knocking out about 1 million fake accounts a day. So over the last couple of months, they've knocked out over 70 million. So given that there's 300 million in the United States, that should tell the users of Twitter and Facebook and all these major social media platforms that a lot of what's running it are bots and fake accounts. And so
it's, besides being skeptical, how am I supposed to spot that?
Yeah. Fakeness? So, I mean, what you would want to do is corroborate that. Look for multiple sources that are claiming this. As you get better and better at this, there's certain sources you can trust more than others. I think fact-checking organizations play an incredibly important role for society. I wish we'd give them more money, but they can only take so much money because they can't take it from everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So places like, you know, Snopes, which is, you know, located in Tacoma here in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Mythbusters.
Yeah, the Mythbusters are really a valuable source for students. And also, I mean, just looking for, again, those things that just sound too good to be true, and not even having to look at, you know, sort of little strange things going on with websites.
I mean, I'll go out on a limb here and say I'm a big fan of the mainstream media, so to speak.
Thank you.
And one thing that we really try to encourage our students to do is to look for corroboration there. It's been stunning to me as sort of a, you know, old guy to realize how few of our students are getting their information directly from a newspaper or even a radio show. It's all coming on Twitter, Facebook, whatever it is that they're using.
Twitter, Facebook, those are so old students.
Whatever the new social media platforms are, that's where people are getting their information. And so just teaching to our students this is one of the most important things we say. You say, you know, dig back to the source. You know, you got this, you heard this, you know, tweet, so now dig back to the news story. Read the news story. Well, where did the news story get it? Well, they got it from a scientific paper. If you really care, go back and look at that scientific paper, because there's a lot of slippage that happens between what's in the paper and what's in the news story. If the paper says, we kind of provisionally think maybe it's a little bit likely that perhaps red wine prevents cancer, you know, the news story is going to say red wine prevents cancer.
Yes.
Period.
Yeah.
And as I say, they'll turn a correlation into causation. Correlation doesn't imply causation, but it doesn't sell newspapers either. And
right.
You've got to. So
especially the social science studies where they use people. I'm skeptical of a lot of what they come up with, though it's very entertaining.
It is very entertaining, and I'm skeptical of those too. The sort of dirty secret is that a lot of the stuff in biomedicine is really not any more solid.
Interesting.
Than that.
Do you have a story of a student who learned that something was fake, that was mind-blowing or life-changing? Tell me a story.
So many of I'll tell you the one principle that gets used the most, and it's the if it sounds too good to be true. We have students. I remember a student specifically running up to us after and said, I think I found something that sounds too good to be true. And he comes in and we look it up, and he was right. It sounded too good to be true. But the one there's the students that we have at the University of Washington, international students, they really take this especially serious. We have students from China, and we've had many of them come up and say, we really want to translate these lectures into our native language so that we can share this with our country. It's not that, you know, China's the only place, but I found that with a lot of the Chinese students, a lot of these things were really eye-opening, and we had many emails sent to us, you know, sort of emotional kinds of emails that sort of indicated that some of these techniques, they'd never taken a class like that. It was sort of the common sort of response.
And the problem is enormous in Asia as well. I mean, which was also something I learned. I would have thought, boy, could it really be worse than it is here in the U.S.? And my students from China and India say, oh, yeah, people are even less skeptical there. And the information that's flowing around on social media is even more incorrect than what we're seeing here in the U.S.
Wow. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
So I found that really striking.
Yes. So, and I understand there may be some disagreement between the two of you here. We're talking with Jevin West, Carl Bergstrom, two University of Washington professors who have this course called Calling BS. I want to know which is improving faster, our ability to produce fake news or our ability to spot and diffuse fake news?
Yeah, so this has been an absolute disaster, in my opinion, is that we went to a world where all the computers in the world were networked. We've got the internet. Now everyone can produce information. that was sort of all right. That was supposed to democratize the content out there. But now all of a sudden there's too much content. So what happens? So we have to figure out how do we decide what to look at? And our solution in this world has been that we all become editors. We're all editors on social media. We all decide what our friends read. We are terrible editors. We don't care. We don't have the same incentives. We don't have the right training.
Yes.
It's a mess. And so what happened is we've opened this.
You're all your own curator, and you're awful at it.
We're terrible at it. Yeah. We've unleashed a Pandora's box that is, in my opinion, really threatening our current democracy. Mm-hmm. And we have no idea what to do about it. So I'm a deep pessimist about this.
Well, and that's exactly why we developed this class, because Carl and I both were sort of depressed at night when we were chatting over our work, that things that we found in our work and also in our everyday lives, that the best thing that we could do, because I work in the area of, data science and machine learning, and everyone's got an idea on how to fight fake news with technology. And I'm sorry, that is a tough, tough task for AI. And there's companies being acquired right now by Facebook and Twitter that claim they can do this. I'm very skeptical of this. So the thing that Carl and I says, well, the one thing we know how to do is teach. So let's create this class. Let's inform the consumer that is doing the filtering, since the gatekeepers don't have that primary role anymore. And I will say that of the two, I'm probably more of an optimist than Carl, just because I do see just the fact that students are clamoring to take this class and other classes around the country, the fact that this class now is being taught in universities around the country and other faculty and other organizations are developing these kinds of classes and the governments and journalists and all the conferences I go to. So I have this sort of a little bit more positive attitude about where we're going. I think it's going to take some time to clean up, but we've been through it before. I mean, people were comparing the printing press back in the 1400s to a brothel because of dirtying the sort of the integrist words. So I think we're gonna work through this.
All right. Well, let's hope human intelligence can improve faster than the artificial intelligence. And both of you seem a little skeptical that AI is going to save us. So it's got to happen in classes like calling BS. University of Washington professors Jevin West is assistant professor in the Information School. Carl Bergstrom, theoretical and evolutionary biologist. It's official. It's in the course book now. And good on you. Continue to call BS and come back with us.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
More with The Record on KUOW Seattle in just a moment.